End of the Blender Special Episode 3, because last one was 2 with a question mark.
Right, so this one's 3 with an exclamation mark.
A lightning bolt.
Lightning bolt, because
Harry Potter.
It's a special episode. We just got back from seeing Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 1. It's like 3 in the morning. We are crusty, but we are happy to bring you this spoilerific breakdown of what we just witnessed. And we have, I'm Viv, by the way.
And I'm Chooch.
And we have a special guest in the burrow. Speak up, special guest.
Hello, it's Jet.
It's Yay. Jet Michelle. She came down and we went and saw the Midnight 01 showing of Harry Potter. And it was fantastic. And of course, I blogged about it, but we didn't podcast about it because it was before it happened the last time we recorded. So pardon me if I do time travel talk because it's a little confusing. Last weekend, Jet came down and we started early Saturday morning and watched the first 6 movies from end to end, starting Saturday morning, and we finished around 1 on Sunday, I think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The marathon.
Right. And Jet, you actually read all the books twice since we first started planning this, right?
Yes. Twice in about 3 months.
Yeah, I hate you. I had hoped to. Here, would you like a chocolate
frog?
I'll pass on the chocolate frog. I had one in the theater.
More chocolate?
Oh, I always take a chocolate frog.
I am enjoying the butterbeer, however.
And that was part of our fun last weekend is Jet got a cookbook. The unauthorized?
The unofficial Harry Potter cookbook.
Right. Unofficial, but really in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
And like some of the stuff that Jet was saying, okay, we need to make this and I'm going to make this and we should have this. I didn't even remember. And then it was like so Jet got this cookbook and decided things that she wanted to make. I knew I was going to do chocolate frogs because they're easy. And I knew that it was something I could do regardless of how I was feeling. And then I also, Jet asked me to make the pumpkin juice. So that left Jet making.
I made sugar mice and pumpkin pasties.
Which I didn't remember either of those or the pumpkin juice from the movies. But it was fantastic as we were sitting there and Jet had her hand sculpted little mice, which you can see on my blog.
The little red tails.
The little sugar mice with the licorice tails.
Mm-hmm.
Hand sculpted that were so gorgeous. It was almost impossible to eat them, but they smelled so delicious that we just started biting their heads off.
Mm-hmm.
Eating their little tails. They were delicious. And then when we were watching... He's always so loud when we record.
What?
Enjoy your chocolate frog, honey. I'm glad you wrapped it in a napkin, a nice, noisy paper napkin.
Nom, nom, nom.
And that was the head being snapped off the frog, if you heard that little pop.
They've only got one good jump in them to begin with.
Yes, which Jet learned. So we were watching the first one last weekend, and we actually saw in the first movie, mm-hmm. when they're in the train, it's the little cab, what do they call it? The car, train car.
Right.
And he's just bought out the whole lot of the cart for
the
he and Ron.
Sweet trolley.
And Ron's eating one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, wee, it's in the movie. You know, it was really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And every time I saw, and I said this in my blog, every time I saw the juice, the orange colored juice in front of the kids at breakfast, mm-hmm. I was like, pumpkin juice.
Only tonight we have the addition of butterbeer.
Yes. Thanks to MA and PA, who I went out with a call for a recipe, a tried and true recipe, and she posted it immediately. It is essentially a mug with cream soda, and you add 1 or 2 shots of butterscotch schnapps, which I added 2 because it's 3 in the morning. What the heck? It's our first drink. I figure it might as well be our last. And then you nuke it for like a minute. And they actually turned out pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really happy with the flavor. So thank you, MA.
Mwah! Hooray for MA.
And I made some more chocolate because we mowed through all those desserts last, not all of them.
No, you made me take a lot of it home.
If it makes you feel better, it took him a couple days to eat what was left.
That's true.
And I kept staring at it going, damn it, we should have sent more. Because they were so good that I gained 2 pounds.
Really?
Just from Friday to Tuesday.
I stayed the same. I'm sorry.
bite me.
Gotta learn that spell.
Yep. So we had the marathon last weekend and... then the plan was, of course, for you to come down tonight and for us to go see the movie tonight and to have it all fresh in our minds, at least the movie side. Now, Chooch and I have read all of... Did you ever finish the last book?
Oh, yeah.
So we, yeah, Chooch and I have also read all seven, but it's been
a while.
It's been years. Yeah. The first three I've read a couple times, and but the rest of them I only read at release.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like not like a brand new experience watching the marathon last weekend, but there was a lot of new stuff as far as me not remembering it.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
And so, Chooch, what was your experience with that? Like with a marathon, was it like discovering it again, or like, would you recommend people do that before they see seven?
It definitely wouldn't hurt. But as we watch them, you know, each of them individually kind of pops up on movie channels and stuff,
right,
or you end up watching one or the other for whatever reason. So
that was another frog head being cracked off.
So they all did tend to be fairly fresh in my head.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know that I gleaned anything new, but I enjoyed them all again.
Yeah. How about you, Jet?
They're always fun to watch. And you're right that a lot of them will come on either as a marathon. I think it's AMC, something like that, does our, one of the Family Network shows. They do a lot of the marathons. They do that for, I think they do that sometime in November. Whenever there's a release, they'll reload a lot of them. They don't play, they haven't played six a lot because it's the one that's still,
still
fresh.
Being bought. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we actually found out during the marathon that, we had carefully concocted the list of which movies we had on hand and if we needed to do any on demand. And we ended up wanting, oh, I remember I had the six when it was on HBO in July. I had DVR'd it.
Right.
So it's been sitting on the DVR since July. We go to watch it on Sunday morning, and it's like half an hour. The first half of an hour didn't record for, and we still don't know why.
Yeah.
And so we actually then said, okay, well, forget it. We'll go to On Demand. Well, On Demand didn't, it had one through five. It didn't have six. So we were still stuck. So we actually were able to get the original copy that we had working.
Yeah.
Which I'm guessing it wasn't to get to that point and not have it immediately just work.
Yeah. And I think it's still showing on HBO, which we don't have now, which is why it probably is non-demand as some contract
exactly.
thing.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid companies.
I know. So.
So.
This is all, now we're entering spoiler territory.
Dun, dun, dun.
Which we're putting all over it. Spoiler, spoiler, spoiler. I'm pausing while you go to reach for your iPod to turn it off. I don't know why you're listening because we're putting spoiler in the title somewhere. All right. So.
Although, you know, like you had said at the theater, the book was out
years ago. Yeah, the book was been released years and years ago.
I guess some people do just watch the movies and don't read the books.
Yeah, that's fine.
There are a lot of people that got into the films without reading the books, my boyfriend being one of them.
Oh.
And so he's following along with the film, and I'm doing both.
Right.
And I have to explain to him a lot.
Yeah. There's so much that they don't have time to fit in.
They don't have time. Well, it doesn't work with what they've decided to use as the plot, edited for, obviously, time. Right. And budgetary restrictions.
Yep.
So
the books kept getting bigger and bigger every single each next one, which is, you can see why they cut this one into two pictures.
They would have done a very great, they would have been, had a very great disservice to the fans if they hadn't cut it into.
So I'm going to skip to what I had initially planned to ask last, which is, how bitter are you that you have to wait to see? I mean, we've all read it. We know what happens.
Mm-hmm.
But to see our little beloveds, to see them actually finish the story, how bitter are you that it's not one long four-hour movie, that instead we have to wait until, I think it's spring?
Yes.
Yeah. Part two comes out?
July.
Ugh, okay.
Oh, wow.
Oh, July. Oh.
Hmm.
So, Jet, what's your thought on that? Are you fine with waiting? Are you bitter that we got cliffhangered, so to speak, even though we know how it ends?
The more that I think about where they chose to stop is makes a lot more sense. There will be an easy build up in the beginning, then the epic climax, and then the kind of easing off and ending the film. So I'm not terribly upset. I'd like to see the rest of it right now, please.
Know, right? Yeah. Please.
But but
it was that good.
You have to wait, and good things come to those who wait.
And we shall be patient.
Yeah. Try.
Yeah. We only have no choice.
So I'm not gonna be bitter about it. I'm gonna look forward to it. I have I'm taking off the opening day, right, so I can go again at midnight.
Yep.
And
can't wait a minute longer.
Requirement, 12:01 right there.
Yep.
Let's go.
How about you, Chooch?
I think I'm okay with waiting. I mean, it's taken this long for them to come.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for this one to come to the theater in the first place. So
yeah.
I'm kind of, you know, build more suspense.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see if they do, you know, the full end of the book with the epilogue. And
I hope so. I think they're going to have to. I mean, it's Hollywood. Mm-hmm. They're going to give us the Hollywood ending. You know, I think they're going to do it. I am fine with waiting because, as I expected, the director did, I think, a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with Jet. I think it was ended in a perfect spot. Maybe not perfect, but perfect for me. I'm perfectly mm-hmm. happy with where they ended, and I'm mm-hmm. sure people will say, "Well, no, they should have done this first." But now I'm at peace with where they left it. It was very touching and poignant, and left me aching for more, which is the point of a cliffhanger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's really I didn't read it just recently, like Jet did, but I can't think of a better spot for it because everything that happens is immediately leading into the next step. So it's hard to pick a stopping point, I think.
Yeah.
I spent a lot of time in the past couple of weeks just looking at clips and reading stuff. And I remember long ago when they first decided to split the film, that there were a few choices that they had. I don't remember. They didn't go into detail, of course, because they didn't want to spoil anything.
Right.
But there were a few places that they could have stopped. And every time it faded out to black, I was terrified it was going to end. I was like, please don't let it stop here.
Yeah.
But yeah, there were a handful of choices that they had, and they chose this one, which makes sense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a good stopping point.
So initial reaction to the film, Chooch.
It was pretty slow in a lot of places, mm-hmm. which I remember from the book thinking, this is really going kind of slow. And, you know, I think, you know, they're trying to get mm-hmm. the time across and what they're going through across. But, you know, for a on-screen action movie, I thought it kind of dragged a little bit. And there were some comments, you know, as we were leaving.
Yeah, the guy in front of us.
I was like that Lord of the Rings, they're just walking all over the place or something.
Yeah, they're like hobbits. Yeah.
But, I mean, of all things to, you know, dislike, it was pretty minor.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jet?
No, he's absolutely right. And the slowness and the passage of time needed to be done to convey how long they had been out, because they started in just before their school term would have started, which is around September, I think, sometime.
I'm not a good Harry Potter geek because I know it starts right around Harry's birthday, and I don't know when Harry's birthday is, so feel free to call us out for not knowing that, people.
It's sometime in September, So that's the beginning of fall, and then they had to progress into the winter scenes,
mm-hmm.
and then the last frozen area that they were when they found the sword, and they needed to show the sense of being lost, almost,
mm-hmm. yeah,
wandering, just staying out of the grips of the Snatchers.
Yeah.
So,
and that's what it was in the book. She did not.
Mm-hmm.
She did not hand over the sword easily. She really put them on an arduous journey to get the locket and to get the sword, and
mm-hmm.
And it was, I think it was way better than just a quick, oh, and here it is, just hidden in Dumbledore's drawer or whatever,
yeah,
you know.
It could have been, yeah, it could have been easily just a couple of quick, short scenes that would move the pace along. And they didn't do that, which is great for that.
Yeah, and they're older now, so it's not as torturous, like when in the first movie, you know, they put Harry as an 11-year-old through everything that you would be able to tolerate seeing an 11-year-old go through, and then they pushed the boundaries on that somewhat too. And I think with every movie they've done a really good job, as the books did, and as he gets older it gets a little darker, it gets a little meaner, it gets a little tougher on them,
moodier,
right? And it's that whole thing of, you know, you are in this state of defending yourself and protecting yourself, so you get tougher and tougher and tougher over time, so they're able to face these horrible things. And And they're scared, but they still do it, you know, because it's kind of like what they've grown up experiencing since they were 11. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I my initial reaction is I had to kind of just grab my chest and sit for a minute because it really, you know, it's been so long since I read the book. I can't remember what year it came out, but it's been years. And there was so much that I had forgotten. I was still processing stuff from what we saw over the marathon. And you know, it just knocked me for a loop. It is such an emotional, dark, excruciating in places. I mean, just it really, if you love these characters, like anybody that's bothering to listen to this does, you know, how long? Okay, 8 years? I'm trying to remember how long it, okay, Naughty Bear was 8, so 11 years, you know, has passed roughly since 11 or 12 years since we discovered the series. It was the third book when we discovered the series. So that's a long time to love these kids and to invest yourself in them. And, you know, even some of the side characters like Dobby returns in this. And, you know, just you just love him so much for being such an odd, strange little creature. And the effects.
Yeah.
The effects on on everything. You know, it was like the first opening scene, I turned to Jet and I was like, oh yeah, this is from one to now. Holy cow. You know?
Yeah.
It's fantastic. And they made Dobby so lifelike, and Creature, the elves, so lifelike that it was really hard, you know, to watch them be harsh with Creature, which is deserved. Creature's a creature. But, you know, Dobby was so human. It was too human for me in some ways because of what Dobby goes through in the story, right?
Yeah, you're right.
So as far as the story, it was fantastic, but I love the book. That's not a surprise. As far as what the director did to bring it to the screen, I was immensely satisfied, as I expected to be when I saw that the director of this one directed at least the last two, if not the last three. I think it was just the last two. This was the third he was directing.
I believe he was the first. The first director, he also did a few others interspersed, and then perhaps the sixth, and then this one.
And, well, I thought Chris Columbus did the first.
I just know that the last three, at least the last three were...
I can't recall.
And I think his name was David Yates. Y'all correct me.
Yes. No, it is David Yates.
And I know that he did this one and 5 and 6. So when I saw that, you know, the same director that did 5 and 6 was doing this one, I felt like, okay, they're not changing direction on us. It's the same kind of visionary kind of view. And Jet's gone to IMDb, I think. but as far as the effects, the special effects, of course, they've gotten better with every movie. That's fresh in my mind from watching the other six. I'm not going to say it's night and day, but like watching the Quidditch, when we were watching the Quidditch match in the first movie, it was like almost cartoonish, you know, when Neville is hanging from the clock tower or whatever that tall tower is, and when they're flying on the brooms, it was very cartoony. And the effects of the, when Harry is leaving Privet Drive and he's got not the oars, what do they call them?
The Death Eaters?
Not the Death Eaters.
Sorry.
Harry's side.
The Order?
The Order of the Phoenix. Right. Duh. It's 3:30 in the morning. Cut me some slack. But, you know, the Order of the Phoenix has gone to Privet Drive to escort Harry to the safe house. And, like, if you compare that scene to like the Quidditch game, the effects are insane.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's almost like a 20-year change or 30-year change in the technology of the special effects in just, you know, how many, 8 years or however long.
You were right, Juju. Chris Columbus was the first director.
Score.
One for Juju. Chet did a scoreboard tally. But, I mean, you guys, what did you guys think of the special effects?
The special effects were fantastic. I mean, there's so much that has to be done for a film in this genre. Just tiny things, like little things that can that float, or things that glow specially, or moving photos in newspapers.
Right.
So, I mean, it's incredible. When you think about all the tiny little things,
it's just it's so real.
And there were, you could kind of tell that they had a really big budget for this, because they would have like the snitch flying around for no particular reason,
other than okay, there's the snitch again.
Yeah, kind of tapping him on the shoulder or something, follow him around everywhere like a puppy. So it's, they had a really large budget for this, I think. And with the technology gaining in leaps and bounds, I mean, you go back, it's not even been maybe a year and you've got Avatar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's most likely what they took technology from to adapt to for the seventh film. Mm. For the facial effects for Creature and Dobby.
Well, and as they're, and again, going back to earlier in the movie we just saw, number seven, like the point where they all drink the polyjuice potion so that they can all look like Harry as the Order escorts him out, so that they've got all these duplicate Harrys running around. Mm-hmm. The special effects on the metamorphosis when they take the polyjuice potion, it's insane. We were giggling because it was so
very
funny
comical
watching their faces melt into Harry's. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's another thing that they used the they did a lot of mirroring, like you used to see they would have twins in old films, and you'd kind of could tell that they would never actually touch because they had to be in film twice in two different spots. But they did that a lot more seamlessly. And the melting and the growing and shrinking of the bodies was
I think it'll be interesting too, because computer effects and modern effects, they tend to age pretty fast.
Right.
And I think that the Potter films have really held up. It's like you're saying, you know, when you look at the Quidditch show, it looked kind of cartoony, but it still looked pretty
good. It was really on the close-up of the characters' faces that it was cartoony for me.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see, you know, in another 10 or 20 years.
Oh, man.
What this will look like
when the Potter movies are classics.
If they'll hold up now.
And I think, for me, it's the same as like stuff that we watched when we were kids, is how much of it is nostalgia factor versus how much of it is actually holding up. So we have to wait for the future generations that aren't fanboys and fangirls right now going to a 1201 showing that don't have a nostalgia associated with it. You know, it's just one of those crazy dynamics that we won't ever know. We'll always love it.
Yeah.
To us, it'll always hold up well, if not beautifully.
So what was your...
Go ahead.
I was going to ask what the highlight was for you. What was like your favorite thing?
I mean, I love Ron and Hermione starting to inch towards each other a little closer. You know, that little moment with with Harry and Jenny. I love... It's hard for me to choose. I love Fred and George to pieces. I fell in love with them in the book. They were what got Naughty Bear sticking with it. It was like, okay, it's just another story until Fred and George got into their hijinks in the first book. And then he was hooked. And so they hold a special place in my heart. And and to explain what I mean by that is my oldest son, now 19, got the first three books for Christmas that year. And then... my ex and I split up, and it was a very cathartic summer for us because Naughty Bear and I would, with LT at the age of four, kind of wandering in and out with his toys. I read the first two books to him, and then he read the third book to me. So it was very, you know, communal for us. Mm-hmm. It was very cathartic. It was fantastic. And so when I say that, you know, I know exactly when he got really hooked. It was Fred and George. For me, though, beyond that, I really adore, of course, I love Hermione and Ron and Harry, but I adore Luna. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely am Neville. I adore Neville. It's kind of like my fascination with Samwise Gamgee in Lord of the Rings. He's kind of like in the back, and Sam gets a lot more play than Neville does. Like, we only had one scene with Neville tonight.
True.
But true to my warrior spirit, Neville, it's a fantastic scene where he's empowered and confident. He stands up and says, basically, bugger off, you know, to the Snatchers. And I think it was the Snatchers at that point.
It could have been Death Eaters. It could have been Snatchers.
Yeah.
They could have been ministry people under the Imperious Curse. Who knows?
I didn't always say specifics. I always cheer when Neville has his backbone straight. Mm-hmm. So that's one of my favorites. Luna at the wedding saying, he doesn't really want to talk to us right now, but he's just being polite. Come along, Dad. You know, I love her to pieces. Because you just don't expect the little brilliant things that fall out of her little odd mouth. What about you, Jet?
I've actually been compared to her.
I'd say that's a compliment.
Well, yeah. No, I'm not complaining at all. But let's see.
You definitely don't put off that kind of airheaded vibe that Luna does. So I got to say, I
wouldn't call her an airhead, really. No, more space case.
Well,
I think, and I kind of wish that we had a moment where she kind of all that, and I guess it does every once in a while, where all of that kind of dizzy blonde or whatever it is that they give her, that kind of lighter than air thing that they give her, is kind of stripped away, and we see her just like Luna. You know what I mean?
That is her, though. And she's consistent that way in the books, and to some extent in the film. They do probably by mistake make her out to be a little more of a ditzy blonde in the films than was intended.
I think, you know, she stays airy and ethereal, but something brilliant will come out of her mouth, but it's still in that same flow. It's just matter of fact.
Yeah, it's never, she never really sounds serious at all. And it's always just kind of, oh, okay. Well, let's see how this takes us.
Yeah. But what was your favorite?
Let's see. Favorite thing. Well, the first thing that sticks out is the dance in the tent. not in any way related to anything that was originally done.
Right. But explain the scene that you're talking about.
In the scene, Ron has recently left. And Hermione is depressed, and she's listening to the radio as Ron was wont to do before he departed. And she's wearing the Horcrux, so she's doubly depressed because it amplifies anything negative. So Harry pulls her up off the floor and takes the Horcrux off and tosses it on one of the bunk beds, and then there's a song playing that's kind of upbeat and cheery. Kind of cheery. I didn't really hear the words.
It was like an upbeat song.
Yeah. And so he starts trying to get her to dance.
Very funny. Very cute.
It's so cute. And he dances.
Ridiculously.
He dances ridiculously. But it's a good thing that they put that in there because it does break up the feeling of being pulled down and being depressed and and tired and confused and exhausted and bored and lonely, and so it breaks it up and they get to comfort each other in that way.
Yeah,
and they have that moment where they stop facing each other, stand up, and
you wonder if they're going to kiss.
Are they going to kiss? But they're, you know.
Yeah.
No, we're just friends.
Yeah, and yeah.
They're just friends.
It was very touching because you know that Harry has feelings for Jenny and mm-hmm. Hermione has feelings for Ron, and it would have been so easy to just have them kiss, and then we'll have a whole complicated, you know,
love trapezoid,
love square. But you know, it's more true to who they are that they didn't kiss. They aren't interested in each other.
They're not. And a thing that is not mentioned in the film is Harry does make a point to tell Ron that whatever the Horcrux told him was completely wrong because they only see each other as friends.
Right. Mm-hmm. And when Ron was shown that vision by the Horcrux as he was, you know, about to destroy it with the sword, you know, you can hear Harry saying, don't listen to it. It's not true. It's not true. Yeah. But that's kind of, you know, Ron's not really catching a whole lot beyond saying the naked writhing of Hermione and Harry.
Holy crap. Yeah. Oh my God.
That was like a very, let me cover my kids' eyes. Oh, wait, I didn't bring my kids. Woo.
Yeah.
The Horcrux opens and you know, it's holding a piece of Voldemort. So it's dark and nasty and it's telling Ron, you know, kill Harry or, you know, don't kill me. This is what they're doing. And it gives him a vision of Hermione and Harry making out. And you don't see any of her naughty bits or his naughty pieces. But they are clearly naked and they're kissing and going for it. And, you know, so then Ron overpowers the vision and destroys the Horcrux like in the book.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a very sexy scene.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about sexy. Definitely risque.
I think for the series, it was like more sexuality than we've seen.
That's true. You're coming at it from more of a parenting side than I am, I think.
Right.
But that's fine.
That's all I know.
No, that's not true.
It's pretty close.
No. You're right. It was extremely up there in the ratings for what the series has been. But like you said, they're growing up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And
it's age appropriate for them, for sure.
It's what he's... It used his imagination to create those things. Yeah. It's what he was fearing the most.
Horny 17-year-old boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
So it was what he was fearing the most, and it knew that that would set him off, and it did to its dismay.
Did you give your favorite inspirational moment or your favorite moment?
No, when I was thinking about it, I think one of my favorite moments was actually towards the 3/4 mark or so. There's an animated segment where they do the Beetle the Bard story.
Oh my God, yes, that was fantastic. Was really with Hermione reading.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I would love to see those done that way.
And that's exactly what I was thinking, is I could totally see them film all the Beetle the Bard stories and have each one be like a different animation style that matches whatever the story is.
Yeah, that would be fantastic because, you know, she put the book out.
Mm-hmm.
So animating all of it, and there's another movie. There's another couple hundred billion for you.
Oh, that was done really well because it set beautiful. It apart, you know.
It was very distinctive from the rest of the movie. Mm-hmm. You're absolutely right. I can't believe I blanked on that. It was beautiful.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so one thing I just want to say real quickly because we're running long into a long segment probably, but one thing that Jet said while we were watching the marathon is that, I don't know if you said you forgot or you didn't remember or wow, just an exclamation of just what fantastic actors that these children have turned out to be.
No, they have. They've grown up in leaps and bounds, not only in physical age, but mentally and as actors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Comparing the first and the seventh, I mean, they are portraying children, and children are often awkward and they don't always react in the way that adults would.
Right.
Yeah. And so they do grow into their roles, and they do a very good job. All of them do.
They do.
You don't see a lot of Draco.
Right.
And, of course, Ginny. Luna's not in there as a lot. Neville's not. But Neville has definitely gotten better in his role.
Better looking. As we commented. Woo!
Yeah,
Neville's turning out kind of nice.
Yeah, he's definitely growing up has done well for him.
Yeah, he's losing that kind of goofy awkwardness that he's had since the first movie.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of like the outsider kind of picked on guy.
Mm-hmm. They've had that. they've all started from nothing. Mm-hmm. They were all fresh, and they've had amazing acting coaches and teachers, and it's just extremely impressive for what they've done.
Yeah,
and I'm so proud for all of them.
Yeah. Yeah, if they, and I hate to say it, I hate to jinx them, but if they never do another great role, all of those kids, and yeah. And of course, obviously, the adult actors. I mean, you know, my heartthrob, Alan Rickman, and, you know, Michael Gabon, how do you say his name? Mike, the, Gabon. Yeah, and Helena Bonham Carter, all fantastic mm-hmm. actors, but to see the children really grow like that is fantastic. And you know, Gary I remember,
Oldman.
Huh?
And Gary Oldman.
Don't even. And I'm going to ask, did you guys, because when they first started the movie, we were like, my family, we were heavily into it. We were like, well, they'll have to switch out kids. That'll be a shame, but there's no way that they can do the movies at the pace that the kids are going to grow. It's going to be unrealistic. And I was saying this last week after we watched the marathon. Thank God they didn't swap out any of those kids.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a travesty. Oh, yeah. It would have been so awful.
Yeah. So cheers to them for being on a quick pace. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had, as far as the darkness, because it is what you said about the dancing scene was what I thought at the time was not only did Hermione need a lift.
Yeah.
But Harry needed a lift. Mm-hmm. I needed a lift.
Yeah.
You know, after Ron leaves and Hermione is so upset and it's just like you lose a lot of heart. Mm-hmm. And you do. You go through trial after tribulation after, you know, horrible thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's this silly, lifting, goofy dance scene that's so adorable and touching at the same time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think, in my opinion, it was very true from what my memory is to the tone of the seventh book, which was extremely different from the first one, which is, oh, no, we're in peril. Ah, mm-hmm. But still mm-hmm. very light because they were kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But now they're very aware of what's hanging in the balance. They're shown really early on what's hanging in the balance with all the muggles and Hermione having to do the.
Yeah.
Oh, the spell. Hermione at the very beginning of the movie does a spell on her parents, which basically obliviate. Is the spell that wipes her from her parents' lives so that they'll be safe because muggles are being killed mm-hmm. as they look for mudbloods, half-bloods. Mm-hmm. So I think it was very true to the tone of the book. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's true. I'm very glad that they put that in there because it's only made in a mention in the book.
And it's a brief scene, but it was wrenching.
Oh, yeah.
It was so
sad. It really set the tone.
Yeah, it did. It set the tone.
Yeah. And Harry going back to the cabinet under the stairs, cupboard mm-hmm. under the stairs, that mm-hmm. was very strange to see. Because I think the last time we saw him in that cupboard was the first one.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And it was just like, holy crap, look how tall he is now, you know?
Yeah, he can't fit inside. Not to sound like a broken record, but in the book, he does end up after the Dursleys have left mm-hmm. and said goodbye. He's going back through the house and remembering things that had happened there.
Yeah.
And he goes back to the cupboard and he's actually talking to Hedwig and saying, "Oh, well, look, this is where I used to live. It's so small now; I can barely fit inside."
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so it's showing that. While his stay there was very not as pleasant as living with nicer family, that he still had memories of it, and it was still...
It was his childhood.
Yeah, exactly.
It was all he knew. It was his memories. He didn't have a happy childhood with his parents. He had a miserable childhood with the Dursleys, but it was still his childhood.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. So there was all
nostalgia there, yeah. I had this thought that it occurred to me during the movie and I lost it and I grasped it again. The thing that struck me was, and I don't know if it's just because we watched the marathon, maybe I wouldn't have projected into this if I hadn't just watched it and seen him as the 11-year-old Harry Potter, but seeing him in the scene with Hermione where, you know, the Horcrux is swirling around and it's got him making out with her. Or, you know, he's making really manly decisions, doing really strong manly things. I still look at him and I see the little boy. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for me. It's especially painful because I know he's been through this all and he's had all this stuff happen to him. And so he's tough as nails. But I see him and I still see that, quote, 11-year-old boy. And I wonder if that's something because I'm the mother of sons and I have that dynamic happen with them. I see my 19-year-old son. He turns his head a certain way, and I see him as a 3-year-old. You know, did you guys have that happen at all? I'm really curious if that's just something in my head or something you guys also experienced because we just did the marathon or otherwise.
Very similar with me, although I kind of chalked it up to just him being, you know, a waify lass.
Yeah, but you also have a son that you've watched grow.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Jet, what about your perspective?
Not having children, I really can't say, but I didn't really see him as a child still. I saw him as a young man trying to come into his own. Mm-hmm. He's lost all protection from friends and relative, well, not relatives.
Right, yeah. Well, Sirius is gone, yeah.
Yeah. His main protector, Dumbledore's gone. He's lost everybody else. Yeah, no one.
McGonagall, everybody.
No one is able to help him right now. So he has to make those decisions. And it's kind of being forced to grow up. But all the same, he does a very good job at handling things as best he can.
Yeah.
With a little help from his friends.
As always, ever present.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy in front of us, as we all sat and waited to see if there was a flash of the next, of the final installment in the series at the end of the credits, and there's not, which Chooch actually looked up on. I wanted to make a point of saying the website is
moviestinger.com,
where you can look and see if there is anything worth waiting around past the credits for. Chooch checked while we were waiting. But I was really dizzy after watching the movie. A couple of scenes really set me for a loop, so we sat there anyways. And sort of had a conversation with the people in front of us where the guy was saying, oh, that was just a busted up Smeagol. You know, and it's a comparison that's not hard to make, you know, between the two films, between the two stories, you know, a boy on a quest to, you know, defeat overwhelming odds and huge evil that seems impossible for him to overcome. But obviously there, and I've already said, you know, Neville's like Samwise to me, but it's probably more Ron is more like Samwise, but it's not the same thing. But I mean, do you see a huge correlation between Lord of the Rings trilogy and the Harry Potter 7 set? Besides what I mentioned. Obviously there's more magic in Harry Potter.
Yeah. I mean, they're both kind of, you know, they both have the hero's journey when, you know, you leave home and you know, you make the round trip and become you know, ultimate evil and
right
well, yeah, there's definitely
yada yada yada
so on and so forth. Well, you've got the Lord of the Rings, you've got the Percy Jackson series. Anything that is remotely main character has a huge seemingly unstoppable evil force that must be defeated, and he's the only one that can do it because he is the chosen one.
Hello, Matrix.
Yeah. Well, that too. I mean, and so anything that's remotely, what's the phrase they use? Arthurian. And there were a lot of books and a lot of talk about how that was in the similar vein, being given a quest that only you can complete because you've got this special power.
Which, thank God, we wouldn't have Zelda, the video game series, without
there you
it.
Go, see? And there's so much, there's so many different ways you can take that theme and that plot.
I think that's my alarm clock thinking that it's 5 o'clock in the morning because I set it an hour fast or something. I don't know. I don't know what I did with that alarm clock this morning.
You've agitated the dog.
Oh, she's easily agitated. She wants to play. She hears us. Sorry, everybody. And then I wanted to ask, because we talked about it after watching 6, was, you know, I asked you, because I couldn't remember if the scene at the end of 6 where they all hold up their wands and they make the what's it called?
I don't,
it's the Death Eater symbol up in the sky.
No, they do not make that symbol. They essentially use their wands in mass to destroy
That's what I was trying to say.
And clear the sky.
Right.
Oh,
Kaylee.
Don't do it.
Oh,
poor thing.
Keep going. I'll be right back.
I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
No, I'm so apologizing to him. He's annoyed. He wanted to go up to go to bed, and now he has to come back.
What was I saying? Oh, it's not in the book, so I really don't know what specifically they're doing. Mm-hmm. In the book, they kind of just are gathering around and being mournful and things, and they do that in the film as well, but they're doing it with their wands up in right. the air to cast some sort of light in the sky to clear the clouds and the Death Eater's mark, the dark mark overhead. And but they don't, it just kind of falls off from there.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not include the funeral.
And that was that's what I was trying to lead to is mm-hmm. When we talked about that, when I asked you, was that scene where, you know, it's the sky is dark. There is like evil overhanging the whole group after Dumbledore dies and they're standing around him. And, you know, they kind of hold their wands up with light to kind of dispel the darkness. Mm-hmm. Like they refuse to be in darkness.
Right.
Is she okay? So, you know, I had asked that question because I couldn't remember it. And one thing that came up from that conversation was, you know, they didn't cover Dumbledore's funeral at all at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that you said that you thought that that would be a good launching off point for that. How do you feel about the fact that they did not show anything about Dumbledore at the beginning other than this book coming out mm-hmm. from Rita Skeeter? And instead they spend a long time. I say a long time. It's not like it's half an hour, but for the length of the film, they spend a large amount of time on Dobby's death and his burial as they close the film.
Yeah, well.
And I think it was fine that they did it the way they did it because Dobby dying was just another blow to Harry, a loss of his childhood.
Yeah.
Somebody that he had loved and cared for so long was now dead. So they very greatly honored him.
Mm-hmm.
But does it bother anybody that they spent so much time, so much effort on Dobby's when they just glossed over Dumbledore's funeral, like just completely?
I felt they glossed over Dobby's funeral as well. There was a lot of preparation in the book for his funeral. They put him in full clothes, in Harry's jacket. There were words said. There was a stone. There were stones collected, carved in his name. Dobby, here lies Dobby, a free elf. The only reasoning that I can come up with is that to portray an actual funeral might be a little too harsh mm-hmm. for some of the younger group.
Yeah, which I. Yeah, hopefully there aren't that many there because that would have been a hard movie for little kids to watch.
Well,
snakes flying at the screen, swallowing you, it's pretty harsh.
There were a lot of coming at the screen, jumping.
Yeah,
jumping Voldemort, in your seat.
Voldemort nose to nose with Dumbledore, dead in his grave, was just like
breaking open.
You know, he's grinning in Dumbledore's face as he's taking the Elder Wand.
And he did. I'm trying to remember. He did sort of do that in the book as well,
yeah.
Kind of just sitting there laughing at him, lying there, and it's just another mark on how badly he treats humanity,
right?
And how awful he is,
mm-hmm.
and how unaccepting he is of his own mortality,
right?
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Chooch?
I think they did fine. I don't know that they really glossed over it. I mean, I thought that they represented both of them fine.
Yeah. I wish that they had shown any kind of honor to Dumbledore beyond, well, this, yeah. The lights in the darkness and banishing the dark mark, that was pretty huge. That was really like, okay, I can breathe again at the end of that movie. Mm. But this one, I don't have a problem with how long they did. They didn't do it as long as they did in the book, but I think that that would have been an inordinate amount of time if they had done all of that, you know, all of those steps. And, of course, that's pretty much where they leave the movie. Was that the last scene?
The last scene with Harry in it.
Yeah.
With the group in it. And it next switched to Voldemort.
And taking the wand. And
right.
Yeah.
That's, okay, that was, I couldn't remember which one was the last scene.
Lightning up into the sky.
Yeah. Okay.
Damn it. With the wand. He's
bastard.
Taken.
Anything? Of course, it's probably like 4 a.m. We had said we wanted to keep it brief, but I don't think that we've gotten loopy and stupid, and I'm sure the feedback will tell us if we did. But
it's not been a full hour, though.
Yeah.
No.
Anything else that we want to cover?
I'm good.
And holy crap, somebody give Hermione Granger a sandwich.
Oh, gosh, she's so skinny.
Thin in this movie. I worry about.
She looks really good, though.
She does. She looks healthy, but I worry about the kid actors, the ones that grow up, you know. She seems to be normalizing. She's made the big independent step of cutting her hair really super short in a pixie cut after this movie was done, but I still worry about her because she's just so skinny.
She's a college student. Of course, she's going to. She has to gain weight. That's freshman 15.
The only other note that I had on the movie, which I took very few notes because the movie just raped my soul, was that there was a song in there called "O Children" by Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, which I thought was really interesting. That they would was like one of the only songs that I saw them name on the credits.
Mm-hmm. I think that was the one they danced to.
Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. It's not. I wouldn't call them upbeat.
No, well,
there was another scene where they were playing rock music or something. Yeah,
And that's the one I think is Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds. That's the one that sounds more to their style, anyways.
Mm-hmm.
But
it was just background music. They didn't, acknowledge it or anything.
I think one thing that I enjoyed. I'm going to just add this also is that in line with the great acting that was done, the ability of the actors and the children to really define a scene and emotion just with a glance or, a bit of, you really picked up on the torture that Draco had. Draco probably didn't say 10 words.
Oh, no. Yeah.
But he was such a tortured child in all of this that you really feel for him, which I remember from the book.
Yeah.
And, even Lucius.
Well, just about every scene with the adult Death Eaters.
Yeah.
You could see in the time that has passed.
Yeah.
How beaten down they all
Lucius
are.
Lucius is looking rough.
Yeah, he's let his beard grow. Yeah.
But he particularly been punished because of his failings.
Right.
So. But you could tell that every single one, when they had the big banquet table, that all of them were like, maybe this wasn't the right decision.
some of them still seem gleeful in it. Some of them,
well,
she's crazy, but I mean the unnamed Death Eaters.
Yeah.
The ones that we know were like, oh God, what did I do? And how about that horrible scene where the muggle teacher from Hogwarts is killed and the tear, oh God.
Burbage
was... That you see pretty early on that this is, if you brought your 6-year-old kid, you need to take him out. I don't think this is a movie for young kids. I'm curious to see what the Kids in Mind movie recommendation site that we use.
Mm.
I'm actually going to go, I don't need to, but I'm curious to go see it and see how they rate it because it's just painful. Painful.
Well, they did rate it PG-13. Mm-hmm. I think it's the second. That they rated PG-13.
Yeah, I know there was at least one other.
They probably did the sixth as PG-13 because of so much violence and death.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I lost it. Keep continuing.
Alan Rickman is still holding my heart captive. I just wanted to say that in case he's listening. I love you, Alan. I know. Helena Bonham Carter was fantastic. Mm-hmm. She does crazy really good.
Yeah. She's done so many crazy characters in the past and the future. Oh, Malfoy and the entire Malfoy family, all three of them, the mother's terrified for her son's safety. The son's just terrified in general because he's realized how awful these people are.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He grew up worshiping his father. Mm-hmm. Now his father's fallen from grace. He's fallen out of favor with...
And relying on him to save him. That's got to be a horrible thing for a child to say, well, now, son, you have to save me because I've done screwed everything up.
Yeah, And so he is just all sorts of torn up. Like, how do I get myself out of this mess?
And not only that, but I think if I remember correctly from the books, you see him really starting to question the choice of, you know, Voldemort over Dumbledore. You can see that hesitation. I saw hesitation in him when he and Harry were like face to face. And it was like, come on, Draco. But he just couldn't.
Yeah.
You know, I guess he knew he was easier. His family was easier to destroy than Harry Potter ever would be. But, any final thoughts before we go collapse for a couple of hours? Chooch is like, nope, I want to go to bed. The butterbeer is gone. The chocolate frog is devoured and digesting. It's time for bed. Mm-hmm. How about you, Jet?
Mm. Caught me mid-sip.
Batabia, thanks again to M.A.
Yes. It's awesome, actually. Mm-hmm. You know, I am looking forward to part two. I'm going to be very sad when it's gone, when it's done. I'm hoping that they do a very good job in the last half.
Right.
There were a lot of things that I was kind of, they chose to do it this way?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever.
Was that just this movie or the entire, well, probably the entire series goes without saying.
I'm a dork. And I like to compare a lot. Mm-hmm. Not negatively, I don't have a problem with creative license and time constraint and budget restraint and whatever other restraint you need you can think of between translating a book to a movie.
Mm-hmm.
But to that end, I can point out a lot of differences comparing one to the other book and movie. And there were a lot of scenes in the newest film that were modified and done a little differently than I would have thought they should have been done.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out okay. I mean, it didn't destroy anything.
Yeah.
And I'm looking forward to the rest of it.
Yeah.
And I think they'll do just as good of a job as they have this time and prior.
I think I'm blessedly oblivious. I am unable to, when I read a book, of course I imagine scenes and things like that in my mind, but I don't find myself really comparing a movie to a book that it came from. I just kind of let those things kind of gloss over me. I kind of get immersed in it and, you know, I get swept away. I feel lucky for that.
For me, is they caught the right tone and hit the highlights.
Which I think they did fairly well in all of the books. You know, it was kind of like, oh, it's getting so dark. I don't want to see the kids go through that. But that's what the books were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, as it went from like 3 to 4 to 5 to 6.
Mm-hmm.
And I like you, I'm already mourning the end of the movies the same way I dreaded the end of the books coming.
Yeah.
But we get one more of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and instead of just 7, we get 8.
So and that. on what was it, Oprah? She said that potentially there might be more. Not with Harry, though.
Mm-hmm.
And Dan Radcliffe said that during a premiere red carpet interview that she had sent him a text message and said that there would be no more with him in it as... I don't remember if she said there will be no more with Harry Potter or there will be no more with him as Harry Potter.
Mm.
I can't recall which was said. So there may be more and it might be
other characters.
It might be before or it might be after, but it would
not be the Beetlebard.
Yeah.
Which is what I would love, the animation that we saw in this would make a beautiful Beetlebard movie.
Mm-hmm.
But, and that's, that kind of, it's kind of cold to break up through text messaging. Hasn't that already been decided? Is it like a bad etiquette thing? She just dumped him. Poor Danny.
FYI.
Poor Danny.
Okay, thanks.
She said it was a reward.
Oh, yeah. He's set, though. I mean, he's definitely got some good acting chops, but
yeah.
Like Frodo, Harry Potter wasn't my favorite. He wasn't my favorite character.
I liked Legolas.
Sam. Who was your favorite from Lord of the Rings?
I think my favorite's the pillow on the bed, because we're just rambling now.
I'm just curious. Answer the question, and we can go to bed.
I don't know.
Blank stare.
Sorry, I got nothing.
Pick one.
I'll pick
Tom Bombadil.
Oh, yeah. I see. That's what I was waiting for, because that's the one you're always excited to see. Okay, he gave the answer, so we are done. Thank you guys for listening. Go see the movie. It's fantastic. I can't wait for the extended scenes to come out on DVD. Longer, please. So, yeah. Any final words, guys?
Good night.
Good night.
Tell us what you thought.
Yeah, give us feedback. Blobbity blah, feedback info coming up. Toodles. Thanks for listening to Into the Blender.
You can find information, comment on episodes, and subscribe to the podcast at intotheblender.com.
You can send us email to intotheblender@gmail.com.
Or you can leave us a voicemail at 657-464-4820.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons, non-commercial, no derivatives, 3.0 license.
You're free to make copies and share this podcast to your heart's content, just not modify or make money from it.
Theme music is provided by Sharif, found on podsafeaudio.com.
For more information about the artist, head to sharifmusic.com.
That's SHARIF music.com.